At this point in her career, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, Meg Wolitzer deserves to be a household name. Meg studied creative writing at Smith College and graduated from Brown. She wrote her first novel, Sleepwalking, a story of college girls obsessed with poetry and death while still an undergraduate. More books followed, including Surrender Dorothy, made into a TV movie starring Diane Keaton, The 10-Year Nap, and The Uncoupling. Her short fiction has been featured in Best American Short Stories and the Pushcart Prize. Meg's written two novels for younger readers and co-authored a book of cryptic crosswords. Meg has taught creative writing at the University of Iowa's Writers' Workshop and Skidmore College. She currently lives in New York with her husband and two sons. Today, we'll speak to her about her newest novel, The Interestings, selected by Amazon as one of their top 10 books of spring 2013. Welcome, Meg. It's so great to have you with us on the Book Report.
Thank you.
I love The Interestings. When I was deep into it, the phrase meaty popped into my head. There's so much to chew on, so satisfying. Tell us about the story by introducing us to the main characters.
Well, the story starts at a summer camp in 1974, which is the summer that Richard Nixon resigned. And Jules Jacobson, who is called Julie Jacobson at the beginning of the book, is a girl whose father has died, and she really doesn't know anything about anything. And she goes off to this camp and meets these unbelievably interesting kids. And it sort of sets the stage for the rest of her life.
And tell us about Ethan and Ash and Jonah.
Well, Ethan Figman is an animator, and he's a very homely boy, and he's very funny and brilliant and kind. And he falls in love with Jules, but she can't really love him back, but he becomes her great friend over the course of the book. And Ash is the best friend, the beautiful, beautiful girl who Jules meets there. And her brother is named Goodman, and there is another friend named Jonah, who is the son of a famous folk singer named Susanna Bay.
Do you see yourself in any of the main characters or elements of each?
Well, a writer is always the sort of god of the book and therefore contains multitudes, I guess. But you have to kind of understand and love the characters in some way, even if they're horrible, in order to know them. So I guess parts of myself are certainly in there, absolutely.
One of the central themes of the book is early talent and the ways in which, whether or not you pursue it, it weaves in and out of your life. Talk about that.
Well, there's different kinds of talent. And Ethan, in fact, somebody who really, to my thinking, represents the sort of kind of talent you can't give anybody. You're sort of born with it and you can sort of nourish it. But he is a real brilliant, original talent. And then there are other people in the book who find that their talents don't add up over time, not enough to make a life out of. I mean, when you're young, if somebody's good in a play in school or a camp, you think, oh, they're going to be famous. You think the world works that way, or at least I thought the world worked that way. But of course, nothing is linear. Nothing really works in such a straight line way. And talented girls at a summer camp might end up as a sales, you know, as sales clerks or doctors or something having nothing to do with their early talent. But I think that specialness is so important to these kids and was so important to a lot of us growing up.
Of course, another central theme is money and how money can change a friendship. Why did you choose to write about this?
Well, I think money and class are so much of a part of our lives. And, you know, we like to think that people's fates sort of are always hinging on hard work. But a lot of it is about connections and money and how you started out. You know, we don't start out evenly, even though it might be nice to sort of think that we do. I mean, what Jules didn't understand is that her friends, some of her friends from New York City, she was from the suburbs, some of her friends from New York City really had so many more advantages and that their lives were going to take a different path from hers, in part because of that. So money is just always there. It's greasing everything. It's changing things. And I feel that it's, if I'm writing a book that takes place in New York, money is going to have to be a part of it.
I loved when Jules asked Ethan, how do you know how to behave rich? Does the knowledge arrive with the money?
Yeah. Because when they started out and he was just this kind of funny looking boy who only cared about making his cartoons, who could have thought, really, that he would end up, you know, the head of basically running an empire, a kind of Simpsons TV show-like empire, based on his cartoon that he came up with as a kid. So he, who is not materialistic, has all this money and access. So she really wants to know, you know, what's it like? How do you know? How do you know how to do it? You're no different from me. Would I know how to do it?
Can you be someone's best friend and still envy their success?
Yes, you can, because I think that most people are not pure of heart. And by which I mean we're human. I mean, our egos get in the way. If somebody tells you, oh my God, this wonderful thing happened to me, and you love that person, your first thought is, that's wonderful. But occasionally, your second thought is, oh, I wish that happened to me. Or you feel a pang, and you maybe hate yourself for it. But I think that it's very, very hard for most people to divorce themselves from their egos. The ego is sort of like a moose head on a hunting lodge, kind of, you know, just sort of jutting into the middle of the room. And we kind of can't help it.
Talk a little about your journey and any tips that you would offer aspiring writers.
I've been doing this for a really long time. I mean, I sold my first novel when I was a senior in college in 1981. And I've sort of been in the trenches of writing, you know. I mean, they're pretty cushy trenches there. I'm very, very fortunate to be living and working as a writer today. But I think that I was talking to a writer friend about what among the students we've had, because I do teach quite a bit intermittently, what they had in common, the ones who really went on to be writers, to sort of make a living as writers. I don't mean to be writers. I mean to really sort of be able to do it in a way and be recognized for their work. And I think that what it was that they worked all the time. It was kind of as simple as that. They just worked all the time. They just tried to figure it out. And if I look back on my own work, like when I write, when I'm in the middle of a book, I'm writing all the time. And when I'm not, I'm thinking about writing. But when I, after I spend a day working, now because of all this technology that's basically ruining our lives in some ways, but aiding them in many others, I'll sort of send myself the work that I've done during the day and look at it on the subway on my iPhone, where it's been made to look like a little Kindle book. So it actually looks sort of the way that it would look on the page. And I can see things a little differently when I'm not at my computer, when I can't actually start typing and changing things. So I'm thinking about the characters all the time, and I'm, you know, have a notepad by my bed. But I would just say keep working, because, you know, if you get very discouraged and don't work a lot and just sort of take months off in the middle of a book, it's very, very hard, I think, for anybody to maintain the thread. The thread is an obsessive one. You know, when you're writing, when you're writing, you really do want to be just so involved in it. It's kind of like a love affair. It's the thing you want to be doing all the time.
So you're not one of these writers who has this 5-hour routine block in the middle of the day, or 8 to 12 or 1 to 5?
I wish I did. I mean, when my children were young, I would work when they were sleeping, or I would work, you know, the minute they went off to school. I sometimes kept banker's hours, because it's just, it is diminishing returns after a certain point, because we're human. Our blood sugars drop. We get cranky. We need distractions. The morning has always been a really excellent time. I rarely have written into the evening. I just kind of like to give myself a break after working all day. But I do, I mean, it's, if I look at it, it's fairly consistent and regular. It's like a, you know, a full solid work day during work periods. But no, it can occupy different times of day.
Talk about your music for a bit.
Oh, my music. Well, that's I feel a little bit of a fraud doing that, but I will. I do like to sing and play guitar a little bit and write music. And I was very fortunate enough to become good friends with Suzy Roach, formerly of the Roaches, if some of you know their wonderful, wonderful music. And she and I just sort of began collaborating, and we set the first pages of some books to music, sort of as a joke. But from there, it became something more serious. And we're actually teaching a class together at Princeton in the fall, and that involves music and adaptation and fiction and all kinds of things.
So it's not, are you doing a CD together that someone could look for?
No, no, no. That is really a premature thought. But no, no, that's not on the agenda.
All right. Talk about Nutcracker's devilishly addictive mind twisters for the insatiably verbiferous.
Wow. Wow. You've really done your homework. That is an old thing. I've created crossword puzzles, not the kind of standard ones where the answer is, you know, actress Merkel, Una, cryptic puzzles and puns and anagrams with my collaborator, Jesse Green, many, many years ago. We did a book of these, but it's been a really, really long time. It's long out of print, but I love crossword puzzles very much.
All right. What's next for you?
I'm just beginning another novel, and I'm not at the point I'm not at the point where I really know exactly what shape it's going to take. And I'm sort of enjoying the freedom of thinking about it, but I know what I'll even like more is the period that I describe when I've thought and thought and thought about it, and I've decided to actually commit some of it to page, and then I'll sort of print it out and go sit in a coffee shop somewhere and sort of cross out most of it and finally figure out, oh, this is what I'm writing. And that's the happiest time.
Well, Meg and listeners, I want to say that I think The Interestings is one of my top three books this year. I loved it. And I really want to thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Elaine, so much.